Hello and welcome to another episode of Season of the Witch with your hosts Rowan Oaken and Tess Lauren, the show where we spill some tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth.
It scares me, like, the idea of, like, using synthetics and, like, someone sat in a lab, like, using chemicals to, like, change, alter the DNA structure of a plant somewhere, you know what I mean? It just, like, freaks me out, man. Like, I don't want to know.
Like, it's the closest we're going to get to Jurassic Park, I'm sure.
Oh, literally, yeah, plants.
I am sure out there somewhere there is a T-Rex in a lab somewhere.
Oh, defo. 100%.
Yeah, full on Isla Nublis or Nublar. I don't know my... islands of Jurassic Park. Anyway, this isn't even on topic today. I'm really sorry. What are we talking about today? Foraging.
Herbs and foraging, just in time for Beltane on Sunday.
Just in time for Beltane. Are you doing anything for Beltane?
I think I'm going to, well, my father-in-law is coming over for dinner, so I'll probably convince my husband to light a fire and be like, yeah, it's a fire, but really it's for Beltane.
Always for Beltane. Yeah, whenever there's a fire, we know it's a bit witchy.
I'm thinking, besides Samhain, out of, like, the four fire, like, celebrations wheel of the year, I don't actually really celebrate Beltane that much. No. Like, it's not one that particularly comes to mind, mainly because it's between spring and summer.
Yeah.
So it's... Not
Isn't it interesting?
Star, not quite Litha.
Yeah. See, I find it really interesting as to what I gravitate towards. You know, I thought I would really gravitate towards something like some kind of summer solstice, midsummery something or other, because I'm very like of the sun. But I don't. It always passes me by, and I'm like, oh shoot, like that's gone. Beltane, for some reason, I really like it. I think it really resonates with my childhood, a very British childhood, and I talked about that on the
very
podcast.
Very much
before.
British.
It's so British.
May Day is so British.
Like the most British thing ever.
Oh, God. I didn't really know about it much until I moved here. Like, obviously, I knew about the Wheel of the Year and I knew about Beltane, but I didn't know the history of Beltane and I didn't know how celebrated it was, specifically in Ireland and Scotland.
Yes.
The Celts really celebrated Beltane and it was like their main holiday that they had was May Day.
Yes.
So.
So is there anything that goes on near you, Beltane-ish?
Not
Morris
really.
Dancing and
no.
I mean, pole dancing.
Accurate. No, not that I'm aware of. I know that there is some Morris dancers around that do something, but like I don't keep up to date with it. And I have yet to see, since I moved here 6 years ago, I've yet to see a maypole. I have not seen one. Never, not once in my life. I want to dance around a maypole, all right? Give me that, someone.
it's probably, do you know what? I must admit, now where I live at the moment, I don't see maypoles up actually. But in the village that I grew up in, they were everywhere. I think they're kind of going out of fashion now. I think that people are like, oh, this does look a bit
That's
witchy.
A bit weird.
This is a bit suspicious. Yeah. I think things like the Wicker Man.
A bit too sexual.
Yeah. Like, oh, why are we making kids do this? This is gross.
Yeah, this is weird.
Yeah. No, the whole thing growing up was quite gross, actually. Like the marrying off of children. Weird. Yes. Having a May Queen. Super
only
creepy.
In England, mate.
Yeah, only
well,
in
Britain.
England. But I think this would be nice. I kind of mentioned this earlier about the idea of doing this episode in a few parts, like a foraging series.
Ooh. Yes, maybe like to do with like the seasons, because
like
there's
it.
So many different things to forage in different seasons.
Yes. Yeah. So what are you foraging at the moment?
Well, May is really good for a lot of things, specifically things like water mint and watercress come up quite a lot in May. Water mint's one of my favorites. Wild onion, lots of wild onion. Three-cornered leek is coming. Well, three-cornered leek's been out for a while now, but it's coming to an end. But the buds are still good, and you can pickle those. Yarrow is coming up now. Love me some yarrow. So that's all coming up to forage, which is great. There's a lot of sea-based stuff as well, like kelps and stuff that come out this time of year, but I don't do any sea foraging because I'm not near the sea. So
I
am,
but
I'm
about
not.
That. I don't,
yeah, there's loads.
I don't really think about things of the sea when I think of foraging.
Yeah. No, a lot of people forget about it, but it's okay. But
with in terms of kind of things that I'm kind of foraging at the moment, definitely anything garlic based is
definitely
quite nice.
Garlic.
mostly to make pestos from, I must admit. Not from a witchy sense of thing, but like a nice garlic pesto, nice wild garlic pesto.
Wild garlic is great for pesto. Three-cornered leek, very similar to wild garlic, great for that.
Is that not just a garlic? I thought that was a garlic. I might just be really stupid.
It's kind of a garlic. It's kind of an onion. It's kind of not anything. It's not a leek. That's what I'll say. It's not a leek.
That's stupid.
No.
So I was like totally trolling everyone for that one, of just the idea that they put the word leek in, but it's not a leek.
I think they needed a name for it besides like three-cornered garlic or whatever. Like that just sounds weird. Because like it's cross-section. The reason it's called three-cornered leek is because when you cut it, it makes a triangle and it's got three corners, and that's why it's called three-cornered leek. But besides that, I don't know. I have no idea.
Because that is growing everywhere at the moment by the river near us. It's just in complete abundance. And the other one that I've got into this year, I dabbled around with it 2 years ago, not really understanding how to use it properly, and that's sweet woodruff.
I don't fuck with that.
I didn't do anything with it. I really wanted to make May wine. This is why I started to grow it, and I thought you had to make it out of the flowers, and the flowers are the most nondescript, tiniest things that you've ever seen, and there's hardly any of them anyway. So I was just like, oh, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this?
Do with this, yeah.
But it's the leaves that you're supposed to do it with. Goes to show how much I was reading about that one.
This is it. You gotta do research, man. Like, I think that's the biggest thing with foraging is people go out and they like, that's great that you can identify something. That's fantastic. That's the first step. But like how to use it is like a whole.
What do I do next? It's even something like marshmallow. That's popping up everywhere at the moment in my garden. Yeah. Bloody marshmallow. The same for mugwort. It's popping everywhere at the moment. That's really annoying. I wish I hadn't decided to grow mugwort in my garden. That's the biggest mistake I think I've ever made in my life.
I don't even, that will take over your entire life.
It's
self-seeds. That's why every year it self-seeds, and then the seeds bury deep into the ground, and then, you know, come spring, it all comes back up. So we're welcome.
Is marshmallow one that you use? Because that's in great abundance at the moment.
I like marshmallow. I like the idea of marshmallow. I don't use it necessarily. No. I don't have a use for it in my life. This is it. Like when I first started foraging and getting into foraging, I wanted to use everything. Yes. And then I felt really guilty afterwards because I picked all this stuff and dried it or made infusions or whatever that I never ended up using. And it was like, I wasted that plant's life. Like there was no purpose in me actually picking that. So now I'm more of a conscience like forager. And now I like only pick things that I'm actually going to use. Mm. And there's actually like the three rule in regards to foraging. So when you go to forage something like being conscious as a forager, so you leave a quarter for the plant, you leave a quarter for the animals and bees and things like insects, and then you take a quarter. So, and that's per bushel or per plant or whatever. And that's like my rule now, because I was overpicking, which doesn't help the environment in any way. No. And two, I had an overabundance of shit that I wasn't using. And then I just had that like guilt for it.
Yes. I think we all kind of go through that process when we first start with anything is the excitement. The excitement, look at this. And look, oh, it's all in abundance. I can take as much as I need. And then but not knowing how much you need as well, not knowing how long something will go, how long something will last, how long it will keep.
It's trial and error too. Yeah. Herbalism, foraging, it's all trial and error. You learn from your mistakes. And that's just, you know, same with witchcraft, anything. Like it's just you learn as you go.
Yes. I think what would be quite nice for this episode is maybe a top three or a top five things, we'll both contribute to these, of things that we could be foraging and using at this particular time of year. Thinking of on the side of the mundane and the magical as well. Because I can talk about one that I've just started just talking about a moment ago, and I'm trying to get into using at the moment, and that is sweet woodruff. Sweet woodruff.
Yeah.
I've only ever found it once in the wild And that's been a graveyard. And apparently, that's where it likes to grow, in dappled super shade.
Witchy. I love that.
Which is super duper witchy. So it's a very ground-covering plant. And it looks a little bit like, very similar to like a sticky weed. And it's probably got other names to it. So it's star-shaped, and it has very small, nondescript flowers on it. And when you pick them, they don't really have much of a scent at all. But when you dry it out, it's got a really rich, earthy, almost kind of like a meadow sweet type smell to it.
I love that.
Which is really, really nice. And the reason why I started to grow it in the garden was because of the tradition of May wine, which comes from Germany. And
There we go.
Facts. History. And you steep this in the wine, and it gives it kind of an earthy, almost, I feel like it's quite a meadowsweet type scent, sweetness to it. And the longer you dry it, the stronger the smell comes. With a lot of things, actually, the longer you dry it out, it kind of deepens the scent to it. I'd been using woodruff in a lot of magical workings for a really, really long time, mostly around protection, as a dried herb. I'd use it in it appears in the balance spell that I did for the spring equinox in episodes 20 episodes ago, or probably more than maybe 30 episodes ago. And I'd always been kind of using it. I never really... never really got a chance to actually get to know it. And now that I've kind of been growing it in my garden, that's a nice feeling of being more connected to something, understanding how it grows, knowing that it likes to be in the shade. So it likes to kind of protect itself from the sunlight, seeing that it, even the way it grows.
Sounds right up my alley.
It was one of those plants that I bought, and it was tiny. It was tiny, the size of the palm of my hand. And now it's just taken up this huge part of the garden. And
I love that.
Travels all underneath in these kind of little connecting roots together. But it's very delicate as well. I feel like if I disturb it, it kind of shrivels away as well at the same time. So it's a very quiet protection, I feel, that's kind of brewing underneath. And kind of mirrors that protection that I have, where I do feel a bit delicate and a bit in need of some extra support. So I feel like I can kind of mimic those feelings of the sweet woodruff. So that's kind of... I have used in protection magics before in the past. And I think thinking forward, I would use it kind of thinking about, that growing in the shade and thriving in the shade, thriving in the darkness. I feel like it's a great thing to use in the winter months. The idea of, I'm someone who suffers from seasonal depression, and sweet woodruff could be a great thing to think about when I'm trying to attune myself to the idea of thriving in the darkness. So that's moving forward. That's something that I want to think about using a sweet woodruff for. That's my number one on the list.
You totally convinced me that I want to put it in my garden now.
Do it!
I really want this in my garden now.
Sweet woodruff for everyone. I should say, like with anything that you forage, high consumption of sweet woodruff can actually be toxic. Everyone, please don't go out and just start eating everything that you find.
And also, there are UK laws as well where you actually, most plants are protected, so you actually can't go and just dig something up. You have to purchase it. Just putting that out there for anyone in the UK or wherever you are in the world, make sure you Google the legislation and laws in your area in regards to foraging, because that's something that's really important as well. Anyway, side tangent.
Things from law that we have to say.
Yeah. Just to cover us, just in case someone takes us to court.
That's our new theme tune.
Don't take us to court.
What's yours on the list? What are you throwing in there?
I'm going to say comfrey for sure. So that will start coming up now all the way into midsummer. Comfrey is something that I've foraged for quite a few years and something that I use a lot of. I'm actually staring at a comfrey infused olive oil on my table right now. That's why I'm thinking about it. Have you ever used comfrey in your practice or medically at all?
Dry.
Do you know anything?
Yeah, I've used it dry with Sweet Woodruff as well.
In the same
spell work. What does it look like when it grows?
So comfrey has long spear shaped leaves. I don't know why I did that visually. No one can see me. And it's fuzzy. It's all fuzzy all over, and then on the underside it's a bit of like a silvery gray color, and then it has these droopy bell-shaped flowers that either come in purple or white. It stands about a foot, maybe a foot and a half tall. Generally it can get taller as the summer goes on. It's called knit bone for those who maybe recognize the word knit bone. That's also comfrey, and it was actually used in medieval Europe and England in regards to helping aid broken bones, bruising. It's also good for irritations of the skin and things like eczema as well. Mm. So I love, are you looking it up right now?
I am. Can you see me like, oh.
So comfrey is really, really great externally. And I have to say externally, in regards to medical uses, it used to be taken internally, but over the years, in medieval Europe and in history, it was taken internally for broken bones to help heal. But as the strains have gone on over the last couple centuries and things, it contains more alkaloids, which can cause liver damage and certain types of cancer. So a lot of people now, especially in America, and here, like the FDA, for example, does not approve it internally. And and here in the UK, it's also not suggested to take internally. So on a medical standpoint, it's usually put in salves and creams, and used not on things like open wounds, but bruising, broken, swelling. Mm. Like if you have a broken leg and you're trying to heal it, as long as there's no open wounds, you can use it on that. And so I really like it for that. But magically, I dry it. Because of the way that it promotes healing, in a magical sense, I like to use it for good health and healing, yes. And protection as well. And I really think I use it in most things. I have some dried on my altar at the moment that just kind of sits there all year round.
Yeah. And it grows huge.
Oh, well, it depends. It depends where you are. But yeah, it can grow. It grows massive. I'd say a foot and a half, 2 feet tall generally when I see it.
Where would you find it?
Everywhere. Open fields tend to really have it. It likes full sun. So open fields generally has a lot of, yeah. And it's the bees love it. It's bees love comfrey.
I'm going to have to keep my eye out for it. It looks very exciting. Yeah. I'm very excited. Like, I've used it bought dried. Mm-hmm. But I've never thought to forage for it before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, it's everywhere. Oh, here, I'll show you, actually. I'll have my... Here you go.
That's a nice little noise.
You like that?
We've got a nice big box. Wait, so is that some recent foraged comfrey?
No, so this is last year's. This is olive oil. This is my comfrey satin olive oil. So this is the leaves and the flowers. Yeah. And I'll probably make a salve out of this because and it's funny that I brought this up as well. Not funny. I'm going to say funny. My husband's dad, my father-in-law, broke his leg in December, November. Yeah. And he's still not healing properly. So he actually came to me the other day and he was like, oh, have you heard of Symphytum? And I was like, comfrey? And he was like, yeah, because that's the scientific name. And he was like, oh, I had no idea. And he was talking to me about wanting a tincture. And I was like, unfortunately, like you can't take it internally, but I have it, funny enough, I have it just sat here in olive oil if you want me to make you the salve. So I'll be doing that soon. But yeah, I love comfrey.
I love it.
I highly recommend magically, medically forage it. It's great because of the way that it comes together. Like I always think of it magically as like fixing something, you know, broken. Does that make sense? So like maybe you're having a really hard time mentally and you feel like there's a bit of you that isn't doing great and is a little bit broken. Maybe like using it in that. A lot of people, and this is controversial because I don't necessarily believe in hexing, but people use it to unhex as well.
It feels like it would do the opposite. It feels like it would tighten a hex. I don't know.
I know.
Maybe I'm just naive.
I don't know. It's
I'm
weird.
Just stupid. what else are we foraging at the moment? I suppose we could talk about garlic.
Yeah, we could talk about garlic.
Let's talk about garlic. We love a bit of garlic.
I struggle finding garlic in my area. Wild garlic, like I said, three-cornered leek is everywhere, but wild garlic is something that like I find very difficult to find near me. And I have to actually go out of my way to find it. There are like places in the forest here towards the New Forest that like have just fields of it, but like I never get the time away from work to just like hop on a bus or something and like go get wild garlic.
Go garlicking. I think it's one of those ones where I think it's the easiest thing to forage out of all the things to forage out there in the world.
You know immediately what it is because of its smell.
You can smell it a mile off.
A mile off. It's the same with water mint. You know, walking on a muddy bed by a riverside, you smell mint, you know. It's easy to identify.
I think garlic, besides berries, looking, you know, like currants and things like that, but garlic was the first thing that I ever started to forage for because it was obvious, I could smell it, and I'd cooked with garlic before, so I kind of knew an idea of what to do with it. I made the first mistake when making a pesto with it of trying to make a healthy pesto, which is stupid. There's no such thing as like pesto is not healthy.
No, it's gonna have oil, all the oil.
And I remember trying to like really water it down. I'd be like, this is disgusting. So there's a top tip is there's no such thing as a healthy pesto. Get that idea out of your mind. But it makes a really good pesto. But in terms of its magical uses, I have never used garlic in a magical sense. Have you?
No, mainly because it doesn't keep. You can't just like dry it out. You know what I mean? Like,
not wild garlic. No. I've never even thought to use it in a magical sense. I think
I'm gonna use it in the magical Google to figure out
the magical Google. The magical Google. Yeah. You know, if I was to speculate, you know, I'm thinking garlic, we're thinking vampires, we're thinking protection. It's got to be there for protection, surely, some form of garlic.
I'm thinking that. I would definitely agree with that. That 100% I would agree. Depending on which kind of vampire lore you're going for, but we'll go for generic vampire lore. That's fine, right. Ron. Whatever. Yeah.
It could be an energy vampire.
Whatever. Okay, so there's nothing on wild garlic, but garlic, there is.
What are we doing with it?
Protection, banishing, warding.
So there we go. I think with its pungency, I can imagine working with that. It's something that you can, like I said, you can smell from a mile off. I love the idea of kind of using it as a ward around my home, something that kind of like sends these scents out to say like, fuck off. Go away.
It says that right there, like not those words, but it says when used in sleep charms, it wards off nightmares. So like, you know, fuck off nightmares. Banishing negativity. Get out of here, Karen. Nobody needs you. Just start carrying fucking garlic around with me. Unwelcome spirits. David Akora.
Send him away. Oh, we need to be careful. We can't go there.
We can't say that anymore.
No. People have been coming for me about my shadiness about TV mediums. I need to be careful. So far we've got garlic that we're looking for. We've got comfrey and we've got sweet woodruff. What's our fourth one?
I mean, I don't know how you feel about this, but all the lilac is starting to come out.
I don't really know what I think, because I didn't think I've sat and thought about it. Should I have a thought? Oh, okay. Should I have an opinion on it? Besides,
I don't know. Do you like lilac?
As a color, yeah, it's fine.
I'm at the flower, but you know, I'm highly allergic, but I love them.
So what are we doing with that?
Well, I make syrup out of it generally, or sugar, lilac sugar. I made lilac sugar last year with it. I want to make syrup this year.
So
it's associated with like romance.
So it has its own sugars.
No. So what you do is you take the you take the flowers and you get sugar, and basically
you make lilac sugar.
You infuse the sugar with lilac, so it's lilac sugar.
I just hit the table. You infuse the
sugar with lilac, not infuse the lilac with sugar. Anyway,
well, that makes complete sense.
Yeah. And it's really fragrant. It's really, really nice. Just don't do what I did last year. And I left one jar for way too long and it got like super gummy because I forgot about it. And I was like, well, I can't use this now. Go me.
What is the mundane medicinal purposes of a lilac sugar? Or is it just like, oh, that smells nice?
Nothing. Lilac is very fragrant. It doesn't actually have many medical properties to it. It's just a flower that smells nice.
Boo on lilac.
I don't think lilac
should make our list. I'm uninterested.
Well, I was going to say, like, unless you're doing like romantic, like romance spells or rituals or any sort, like lilac's kind of like not really got a purpose.
I don't have time for romance in my life, Tess. I'm too busy for that.
It does banish negative energy as well, but that because it's so bright and fragrant, it's like, get out of here, bitch.
Everything banishes. Yeah,
everything is like, get out of here, bitch.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, there was one that, oh, dandelion.
Oh yeah, dandelion.
Of course, we love a bit of dandelion.
Except you don't want to forage dandelion root this late in the year. You usually do that at like the beginning of April.
Why? What's it going to do to me?
Because it's already flowered. You don't want to pick stuff that's already flowered because the active constituents aren't in the roots anymore. They're putting power into the leaves and the flower, so you lose its kind of potency once a flower starts to bloom. So when you go to forage roots, it's generally, I would say generally end of summer, beginning of autumn is when you really want to forage for roots.
The more you know.
Leaves as well, so things like hawthorn leaves, which I'll get into in a minute because Beltane.
Yes.
Hawthorn leaves. So the leaves of hawthorn come out before the flowers.
Yes.
Whereas with blackthorn, the flowers come out before the leaves, and there's a word for that, but I can't remember what it's called. Basically, things like dandelion leaves and hawthorn leaves, you want the young leaves first. It's the same with stinging nettle. You don't want to pick stinging nettle when it's matured and is starting to flower because, again, yes, you lose the potency. Not that you would put stinging nettle in a salad, but anyway.
Was dandelion and burdock as a drink? Was that a thing growing up for you?
No, God, no. We had root beer.
Root beer. What's in a root beer?
Sassafras.
Sassafras. What's sassafras? It sounds like you're making it worse. Oh, inside it's got blassidas, doodleberries.
Sassafras.
What is sassafras?
Sassafras, yeah, it's a plant. So it's used in medicine. It used to be used for like colds and things. Like, it's a
you're calling me now.
No, I'm not. Google sassafras. Fuck you, Rowan. but it's usually made in beverages. And candy.
Okay, it's a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah, I told you.
And when you look it up,
it also says believing me.
Okay, so I now believe you. So you had root beer, but not dandelion and burdock.
No, I actually didn't discover dandelion and burdock till I moved here, and I really actually hated it at first. And now it's one of my favorite things ever. But it has to be like authentic, traditional.
Yes.
I don't like the stuff you buy from the grocery store. It's not that's overcarbonated and has too much sugar. I like the old glass bottles that they still sell of it.
Yes,
really good.
That was my favorite drink as a child. Was dandelion and burdock.
I can imagine.
It's such a witchy thing to like, isn't it? It's just so nice, I think, because both dandelion and burdock are horrific in the garden. Grow abundant, get everywhere. Burdock root has the longest root that I've ever known of any plant in all my life.
It just goes on forever and ever.
I remember when we were redoing our garden and trying to dig up the hole of a burdock root, and I was knee deep, and I still wasn't to the bottom of the root.
They get so thick too. They get like thick and long, and you just, it's terrifying. Well, it is the season of fertility coming up.
It is the season of fertility. Absolutely. You want those thick, chunky burdock roots.
Yeah, you do.
But it's nice that you can take something that is just in all of this abundance and create something so delicious out of it.
I have to say, the English back in the day were certainly frugal.
They were. You just give anything. I think, like, you know, when you've got like
an abundance, you may as well, right?
Yeah, like, I think you were just kind of ready to try anything at that point. When, you know, you've got like boils and you're dying at 18, you're like, oh, do you know what?
You're like, hey, well, that flower looks really cool. I'm gonna
rub this on my skin and shove some comfrey up my butt, and I don't know, like,
it's for the best.
Fingers crossed. Won't get the plague.
To anyone, do not put comfrey up your butt.
Disclaimer. I'll put that in the show notes.
Oh my god. Yes, please do.
In terms of dandelion, it was one that I remember like having a little munch on as well when I was younger. I'm thinking, oh, probably a dog's peed on this. I shouldn't do this.
But like literally you don't have to, like, dandelion is the safest of the safe things as long as it's in a safe area without pesticides. And again, animals haven't like defecated on it in any way. Yes. Dandelion's great. You can use the root. You can have the leaves and salads. You can use the flower. You can blow it and make wishes.
Yes.
It's super magical. Magical.
Such a magical plant, blowing wishes. I didn't think about that. Telling the time. Was that a thing?
Sun magic.
With dandelions. Did you also have the rumor? We're really digressing today. This is one of those episodes, I think. Did you also have the rumor growing up that if like you touched the like kind of the milky sap of the dandelion, it would make you wet the bed?
No.
Was that a thing growing up? Like, obviously, no, it wasn't.
No, God, no.
No, this like really weird superstition thing. So, and then people were like, "Oh, it's poisonous," and it's not poisonous.
We had the buttercup thing where you like rubbed it on your chin or whatever.
But you hold it underneath.
And then you're like,
yeah, you rub it.
Yeah. Just rub it. I rubbing buttercups on my face as a child. Now like,
and then you would be like, "Oh, you like butter?"
It didn't work. Anyway,
like, why was that such a bad thing? Why was it such a bad thing to like butter? Like, was that the reason? Did you have that? And that was the, like, you put it under someone's chin, and if it was yellow, then you'd be
they
like,
didn't like butter.
Then if it was yellow, they did like butter. They did. Oh. They did. Was that not a thing? Was that not the reason why you did that? Why did you do it? Why were you rubbing buttercups on your
face? Because it turned your skin yellow. I don't know. Just reminds me of the Build Me Up Buttercup song. That's like the only thing that I'm thinking
of,
right?
So what else should we be foraging? I think, have we got one more? One more. Let's throw one more out.
I would say, let's throw one more out there. I'm just thinking. In general, we are getting to mid-spring, so you're starting to lose a lot of herbs. But I mean, if you want to go down the water mint route, that's great too, because mint is really good. Mint is fortune,
abundance,
protection. Everything's protection.
Yeah. Describe a water mint to our listeners.
Well, we all know what mint looks like, right? I would hope.
Minty.
It's like, I don't even know how to explain. It's not like quite heart shaped, but they're quite like broad leaves, bunched together on the stem. Water mint is darker. It's got a thicker, darker stem. It's almost like a dark mint green. See, mint, dark green mixed with like a burgundy color. So it like creates this like darker shadow to the leaves itself. And it smells really strongly of mint. And you find it mainly on banks, in muddy banks along riversides. It likes water, hence the name. I feel like I'm literally explaining this to a 4-year-old. I'm so sorry.
is there anything in the mint family that is poisonous? Are there anything that could be confused for a mint that would kill me?
No, because unless it doesn't, I mean, if it looks like mint but doesn't smell like mint, don't pick it. That's like my holy advice.
Good rule.
I mean, there is perilla, but perilla is not
that
found.
That sounds like a villain's name.
I know, perilla. But that's found in the United States, and that's toxic.
Okay.
Perilla.
Does that smell like mint?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. It's from, I think it's from like
never
Tennessee.
It.
Am I making that up? I don't know.
There we go. Our Tennessean listeners. What does perilla? With a V?
P.
Perilla. Oh, it sounds less like a villain.
Sounds like great aunt Perilla.
Perilla's coming, and beware, she only wears knickers.
Was
after
that Anne
of
Green Gables aunt? I don't know, like, not aunt, but Marilla. Her name is Marilla, not Perilla. No.
It always sounds like a name. It sounds like a beautiful villain's name. I suppose as a bonus, we should talk about Hawthorne because...
Yes.
Fucking Beltane. And it would be rude not to.
But the thing is, and we had this last year, I think even we had like a whole like Instagram conversation about this, was that it doesn't actually come out on May Day anymore. So the lore of... Yes. So, and I figured this out the other day. So back in the day, May Day was celebrated by the women and men, I guess, of the village would go around and collect the dew off of the grass and the hawthorn flowers. And they would do like a wash of their face with it. And then that would be like bring abundance and good luck and help with fertility, because that's a huge theme for Beltane. All the babies are coming out. Everybody's doing it in the bushes and going a-maying.
I love going a-maying as a phrase.
I love it.
Just going to into the bushes and go a-maying.
So amazing.
Yeah. Which just means boning. It's boning.
It does.
Boning in the bushes.
You know, creating your crop of 8 children to take care of for the rest of your life. Anyway. where was I? Hawthorne, right.
Yeah, okay. Dewy faces.
So you'd not only like wash your face with the dew of it, but you'd also like a lot of the time during the festivities, people would make hawthorn crowns, like flower crowns. Mm-hmm. Like we said, it doesn't actually come out to the end of May generally in this country. And the reason being, and I found this out the other day because I was like extensively researching it for an article I'm writing. I was like, oh, it's because the calendar of the year has changed over the years. It's changed. So May Day falls at a different time now than it did hundreds of years ago. And so because of that, the seasons have also changed. And then also our climate has changed so much that the flowers are not blooming at the time that they should be. Yes. So there's so many factors to it. And I like get really sad when I look up like traditions of May Day and everyone's like, well, I can't do anything with hawthorn flowers. And I'm like, I know.
But I think this is one of those things where like people are like pissing the pants to try and do something on a certain day in the craft. Yeah. And no one was worrying themselves back then. They were like, oh, let's do it when the hawthorn's ready, because then, you know, that's what you would do.
Yeah.
It was when it was ready, when nature was ready, when the outside world was ready.
Bring me a basket of hawthorn flowers for abundance this year. What the hell am I gonna do?
Get me some flowers, bitch.
you always do this fast. You always sound like Lumpy Space Princess. What the hell's her name from Adventure Time? LSP. You sound like Lumpy Space
Princess. Oh, I've not been called that in years. Ooh.
LSP. God. I'll send you memes later. It's fine.
And the other thing with the hawthorn as well is it's supposed to be bad luck to bring that into your house any other time.
Exactly. And the reason being is because there's two times of the year when the veil of the spiritual world is thin. That's Samhain, and then that's Beltane.
Yes.
So Beltane, and actually, for those listeners who don't know much about Beltane, just a quick like rundown. Beltane is basically celebrated because it's the time of the year where the May Queen and the Oak King come together, fall in love, and consummate their marriage. And that's where going a-maying comes from, because they did it. And then like that's why the fertility base, basically. Yes. So it's really weird that like hawthorn is associated with that, because basically the May Queen is also known as the Fairy Queen. Mm-hmm. And she had to do with the fairy world. Yeah. you're the nicest fairy queen, don't worry. I find it really, really funny that the hawthorn is associated with it, because it's the one time of year where you can actually bring it into your house and you can do things with it. Every other day of the year, the fairy gonna come for you. They're gonna knock down your door. They're gonna murder your family. Like,
they'll eat your children and they'll
steal them. Steal your
drink
children.
All your milk.
Yeah, you don't fuck with the fae any time of the year except for May Day, when it's allowed, because in a respectful manner to the fae. To take hawthorn inside your house. Just don't do it which is ironic, because how else are you supposed to make things out of the haws in autumn if you can't bring them into your house, which I do all the time. Am I cursed? Do the fae know? Like,
maybe you do. Maybe they are the ones that broke your phone.
Oh, mate, don't.
I'm sorry.
No, that was me. I balanced it on the banister and it like fell down the stairs.
You think
so,
it was you? You know. You think it was you? You think you don't know it was you? You think it was you?
Oh my god, dude.
So what would we be using hawthorn flowers for besides heart troubles? Because that's all I know it for. That's all I know. That's all I know hawthorn
for. That is what it's for. That is, no, you're right. That's what it's for. Okay. But I like making, again, I like making syrups. Anything flower-based makes a really nice syrups for like cakes or drinks. Yes. Blackthorn and hawthorn flowers make beautiful syrups. So that's what I'll be doing when the flowers do come out. But then again, yes, I have to be conscious and not take too many because I would like also them to create fruit for haws in the winter time. So I like spread it out. Yeah. I'm really lucky in the area I live in, and specifically in England as well, that there are so many hedgerows. So the hedgerows around my area are all hawthorn because of the big thorns. Those were used in history to keep cattle in and predators out for farmland. And so hedgerows are quite prominent in countrysides in England. And so it's really nice. I can like walk out my door and there's like a farm and hedgerows. And then I walk a little bit more and there's forest and a river. So I have like an abundance of places to forage, which is nice.
Yeah, hawthorn is incredibly abundant near us as well. And in its magical sense, I've used the thorns of the hawthorn and spiked them in around our property as to kind of create a magical barrier of protection.
That's exactly what it's
like. All my magic that I do is just like piss off people magic. I'm just like, I'm just gonna throw garlic around. Like, I'm just gonna
put. Interesting enough, people used to use hawthorn and blackthorn thorns for like sewing needles and things like that as well back in the day.
That's cool, right? They are bloody sharp. If you've ever,
they are like, so sharp.
Yes, I don't know if get my bloody words out. Do you know, like, I've only recently come back from the Scottish Highlands from this hike.
Okay, don't rub it in. Whatever.
Scottish Highlands, went on a hike.
I'm happy for you, really.
I'm still not used to talking to people. I'm still really struggling with it. You looked really intently like you were staring at your tea, though. Something happened. Like,
I washed my mint, but there's still an aphid in my drink.
Oh, protein. Okay.
Protein.
Right. Yeah, no. As the world intended, aphids flavored tea. I thought like if something was happening in your tea, like you were divining something. I was quite excited.
No, I wish. I don't do that. I wish I knew how to tea leaf read.
I can't tea leaf read. But yeah, I'm still not quite used to talking to people. Just for being on my own for so long, I'm finding my words aren't quite coming out. So this is a real mush-mouthy podcast episode. I probably should have waited another week just to get used to talking to humans again. But hawthorn, have you ever tried eating the leaves?
Hawthorn, yeah, all those fine. Yeah, you make salads out of them. Like I said, though, you got to pick them when they're like fresh, because otherwise, once they get more mature, they're stiff and they taste like ass.
They get quite leathery, don't they? Actually,
they do, and they bitter, like really, really bitter. Like hawthorn leaves aren't like a good taste anyway. Like they're okay. Like, I don't know why people are like, yeah, put some hawthorn in your salad. Like, I would have to pick hawthorn leaves for an hour and stab myself 1,000 times to put them in there. But when I'm out for a walk and I'm foraging and I see a nice fresh leaf, I'll pick it off and I'll have a munch, whatever, just to know that I've done it. But like, I don't go out of my way to make a hawthorn salad. No one does.
No, it's the most disappointing thing ever. I just don't understand it. My father-in-law's all, like, whenever the leaves out, he's like, oh yeah. And he calls it bread and cheese, which I find really creepy.
Bread and cheese, yeah, like, weird, right? Like, I don't...
What's that?
Like, there's a reason for that, and I can't remember why it's called that.
It tastes neither like bread nor cheese.
There's a reason. It tastes like a bitter leaf.
Apparently
they're nutty flavored. That's why.
That's not true. What's that got to do with cheese and bread?
Yeah.
Why not nuts? Why not nut salad?
Yeah. Why not nut plant?
Oh, we're stupid. So we've got some nice things that we're foraging at the moment. Got some things that we're doing for Beltane. Other things that I do for Beltane, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, is very similar to the traditions of bringing things into the house and just decorating.
Yeah.
With crap that I find in the garden or growing in the little forest behind us, bits of ivy. We're a lot more conscious about what we collect now. Before, we were definitely not conscious. We were like, let's just take this ivy off this tree because we think that would be nice.
But also, ivy's poisonous, bro. Like, what are you doing?
Is ivy poisonous here?
If you eat it, yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm not munching on no ivy.
You can make soap out of it. Like, you can wash things with ivy, but like,
I've heard that some ivies actually you can make teas out of.
Yeah, like ground ivy is fine and stuff, but like you wouldn't want to. It doesn't taste good, and like also like ivy is, it can be poisonous. You don't want to eat it. It's bad for you.
We don't get poison ivy though, do we? That's not a thing.
No, you don't get poison ivy, but like I would not fuck with ivy.
No.
Anyway, so then.
If anyone wants to find out what other plants they should not put up their butt, where do they come and ask you that question?
At the Obscure Witch on Instagram. I've spelled this out 1,000 times, but that is the OBSCURA witch, all one word. You can come complain at me, or we can hang out and drink tea. That's fine too.
And be like, I put sassafras up my butt and now I'm itchy. And
are you okay? You keep bringing that up, man. Are you all right?
What about sassafras in the butt?
Oh my God, no.
And if you want to find me and think about other things that you can put outside your house for protection, which is anything, everything gives protection and exercises demons. So that's nice and easy. Exercising those demons.
Call Sam and Dean Winchester, 1202-433-7690.
You can exercise demons with me at SOTW with Rowan on Instagram, possibly Facebook. There's also the Cheese Witch Coven, Stay Cheesy, which now has a new admin running. How exciting! Where you can go and meet other exciting cheesy witches who like to get together and to chat shit about witchcraft and eat cheese.
Yeah.
Crackers and other things that you put with cheese, like
stay sassafrassy and classy.
Stay sassafrassy, classy,
witchy, and itchy.
Say all of the above. Don't put comfort up.
And have a fabulous day.